So I don't know if you've listened and are familiar with how we open this whole shebang, but we do not have theme music really, except that Ron and I play When the Saints Come Marching In on mouthhorns. And you are free to join us on the mouthhorns when we play it. It is up to you, but that is what we do. And so, Ron, three, two, one.
Bum 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 bum
Hey everyone, I'm Charles Starr. Welcome to episode 12 after week 11 on City Saint and Country Saint. It is our bye week, and so instead of having someone whose ass will be got, we instead just have some guests this week. We'll get to them in a second. But first, my friend L. Ron Mexico. Ron, how are you doing?
I don't know. I have a weird, like, what's the word? It's like a bye week, so I have this weird pent up energy. I don't have any place to put psychic energy on like a Sunday. I'm supposed to be yelling at the TV. I don't know what to do. I'm in like limbo. This is strange. I started pulling stuff apart at work. Just like $1 million
Works
worth of
at
equipment.
veterinarian's
No.
office. He was yanking dogs apart. I spent the day actually at basketball. It was a very weird Sunday for me, but I got lucky. My son is a Sixers fan, and on the Saints bye week, the Sixers were in town. So we went to Barclays and watched them win. And so I've hardly gotten to watch any football at all. I guess I'll catch the fourth quarter of the Denver Minnesota game or something. But we have good news because Tampa lost. And
Nice.
so in not playing, we picked up a half game on one of our rivals, and the first place New Orleans Saints have reasserted their dominance. So with us this week, the first guest I invited on this is someone who has had me on his podcast a couple of times. It is the Excellent Soundtracker podcast. This is Uwe Bollix on all socials, and my friend Eric Peacock. Eric,
I'm
how are
great
you?
and I'm happy to be here, despite the fact that, I knew that you did the mouth horns, and I gotta say that, I wanted to join in, but seeing it in action, I couldn't stop laughing. There's a difference between hearing it and seeing it.
Nothing can prepare you for.
Yep. And that's a familiar voice in the background. As soon as I invited Eric, I thought the funniest thing to do, because if you listen to Soundtracker, you know that Eric invited me on, and then right before we recorded, he's like, "Hey, do you think you could get David Roth on?" Which we have taken to be like a deep abiding insult. So I made sure that David Roth was on this episode as well.
I honestly don't. As
David,
some,
how are
I'm good. I'm good. As somebody who does not like talking to Charles unless Eric is also here, this is a huge relief for me. Obviously, Ron, it's nice to have you on the call as well, but this I'm feeling much more at ease. This is a treat. I'm very happy to be here. And as Eric said, you can listen to a podcast and you can even guess at what your friend might sound like if he was trying to make trumpet sounds with his mouth. But watching it happen on Zoom is a totally different animal. That is a horse of a different color.
Yeah, in season two, we're going to invest in like real equipment, which is to say, toilet paper tubes.
Yes.
Maybe a gazoo
We don't have a kazoo budget. I have to replace my microphone. And I'm exploiting teen labor for our sound engineer.
He's learning a valuable skill.
So let me start with Eric. How is you're a Browns fan, correct?
Yes. So here's the funny thing. I'm a long-suffering Browns fan, right? And I'm a long-suffering sports fan in general. but they kind of let me off the hook these last couple seasons with that Watson signing, where I could kind of be like, I don't got to fucking do this anymore. I don't have to be miserable for a little while. You know what I mean? So like, I've like lightly checked in on that. I mean, I'm glad they're doing well this season. I am. But like, I have very lightly checked in. I came here to talk about the Kozar era. That's my plan. I'm going to spend like the whole hour talking about Jordy Kozar era Cleveland.
That's why. That's why.
Get really fucking mad about the fumble. Like, I'm just going, yeah, it's going to be, no, but it's, you know, I was thinking about this today. I had a drive to Columbus today, a drive back from Columbus today. And I had time to think about like, what the fuck am I going to talk about out here? I don't know anything about the goddamn Saints. Like, what am I going to do?
We don't expect that.
You know, and I'm like, well, I haven't really paid attention to the Browns a whole lot in the last two seasons, like a standard sort of thing. I'm holding myself to some sort of standard, but I thought about this. I was this guy for a while. I went, so God, how long ago did Clarence get married? One of my good friends got married from college, and we did a bachelor party in Cleveland, probably 15 years ago. And This is like what I think about when I think about long suffering Browns fans. I went to
bachelor party town.
It is. We went to the most miserable fucking Browns game. It was like 50-mile-an-hour winds. We were up in the top. it was like the second to last game of the season. It was the Tennessee Titans. Both teams had won about five games, maybe four games. And so we were like, this fucking sucks. We sat in the Browns backers bar, and there was this guy there who was so drunk he could barely keep his head up. Right. And the Browns won this game with like a minute left. This guy hadn't moved. This guy was like, I mean, head down, shots, empty shot glasses in front of him, right? And we pull this last minute win out, and this guy fucking slams the counter and goes, "We're back! We're back!" And like, that's what was the most meaningless win. And like, that's how it was to be a Browns fan, though. That you would like any crumb that you could get. So like,
Art Modell.
it has been pretty nice to not have to like do that to myself. But of course, when it happens, they're playing well, so it's like it's a catch 22.
No, I hear you, David. Any thoughts on Brian Sipe?
Yeah, sure. I'm more of a I have some notes on Kevin Mack stuff. I've got a, like 5 minutes worth of just Kevin Mack spoofs and goofs. If that's all right to do. I was trying to figure out when Eric was telling that story where I was like, so is this a Derek Anderson era? What are we talking about here? Like, but 15 years ago is, I mean, the thing with the Browns is like, there is a couple of years where you'd be like, they won 10 games but didn't make the playoffs this year. There's like some years where you could say that. But generally, if it happened before and it involved the Browns, like the 50-mile-an-hour wins and the drunk guy who dies briefly, like that's all implied. Like that's just kind of like baked into the story happening at a Browns game.
Yeah. All right. And so, David, you actually are a Giants fan.
Yeah.
So that's macro depressing.
Yes.
But micro.
Yeah.
Did you watch the game today? I only know that Tommy DeVito had his coming out game.
Yeah, I did watch more of it than I had planned on watching. Like there's a point, it's kind of similar to what Eric was saying, that I get to with certain Giants seasons where, you know, I start out watching and I'm like, it's not like I'm surprised when they're bad by this point, you know, like it's been when they're bad, they're a type of bad that is like institutionally dictated. Like they're bad in like a Giants way. Like you can tell some owner is like, this is how you go, you know, whatever, 6-11. This is like doing it the right way. And in this case, like once, like they started off this year, they looked awful. Like, but by the time you get to the, like, it's your third string quarterback, like it's just some guy named Tommy from Ramsey, New Jersey or whatever. Like, it's not, like, I don't need to do that. Like, I've got other shit going on in my life. And so, like, I had just taken myself off the hook and was like, not for the, you know, valid ethical reasons that Eric was able to, like, sort of get out of being a Browns fan, but just for me, where I was kind of like, I don't think I'll just take a walk. Like, I think, I did wind up watching today just out of laziness. And it was, I wouldn't say that DeVito looked good. I would say that everyone that has a coaching job for the Washington Commanders is going to be fired as a result of the team's effort in this game. But it was definitely the best I'd seen DeVito look. And, like, there was some cool Saquon Barkley stuff. Like, it's actually probably the most fun I've had watching a Giants game this year, and it was an awful football game, but it was still, you know, yeah. I mean, not like there's a I think having the Jets also in the media market is a nice reminder that there's like, there's types of football that are much worse than this.
Evil in the world.
Yes, there is, right. That it is just kind of like one of those, you don't want to do like the whole Tommy Lee Jones monologue from the beginning of No Country for Old Men, but it's like about pushing my chips in and saying I'm going to be a part of this world and all that other sad Texan shit. Like Zach Wilson's on another channel. I know it could be worse. So I just like, sort of leave it be.
It is legitimately funny
yeah.
that the Giants quarterback is from like the shadow of the stadium.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Tyrod Taylor got hurt and they just put a want ad in the Bergen Record.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's the guy.
He's
who
like
replies.
The tallest guy.
You know, I've thrown the balls. Yeah. You know, he like lied about his relevant experience. You know,
yeah, it does have the feeling, especially the first few games where he's out there, and it has that kind of like. You remember like the Saturday Night Live skit where Chris Farley's on a Japanese game show and he doesn't speak any Japanese? Like, it was sort of like that well, energy. Like the first.
It
two
was
games.
Very clear that Brian Daboll had no interest in letting Tommy DeVito throw the ball.
But now
anywhere.
They seem to have.
Now
sort
I
of...
guess he can, but I mean, when they went to overtime, this was the funniest thing to me. The Giants went to overtime against the Jets, right? Mm-hmm. And they get the ball, and he throws three screens that were not blocked. So he's 3 for 3 for like -2 yards.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, that is not a way to
so Rudolph offense. Always like to me there's like a very high bar for this team is giving up and they're like mashing the simulate rest of game button like because I they did that when Mike yeah. Glennon was briefly quarterbacking the team they did something similar where they were just like punting on second down they were like I don't know I'm just not feeling it like in this case the early DeVito period was like legit some of the weirdest shit I've seen the team do. Like it's clear they just didn't know if he could do anything and they didn't trust him to do anything beyond hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley, who had 10 guys keying on him every play. Right. It was just like really.
And the 11th guy was having a sandwich.
Yeah. The 11th guy was kind of, that's the dude that DeVito was like, that's the mic. And they're like, all right, thanks man. Thanks for your help. So whatever, but I don't know. I'm not like all in on the DeVito experience, but this was like the first indication that I'd had that there was like any reason to watch the team the rest of the way that like they could even give you like a football game worth sitting in front of. But
yeah.
Eric, do you feel like the situation the Browns are in now? Like I like that DJT dude. Like I just know him as like a high energy dude who threw like a really good block for one of his running backs in a preseason game. So he seems like a maniac kind of, which I think is like, if you had to choose a backup situation.
Oh yeah. No. I mean, I guess I am fibbing a tad in my whole Browns watching thing. I sneak it is what I do.
Yeah. Same for me. Uh-huh. Like I watch until I don't want to watch anymore, but like, I'm not like completely out of the house, you know? Well,
what I do is
you have by the time this episode is over, he's going to be wearing his Deshaun Watson jersey. But it's not actually going to be a Browns jersey. It's going to be like a suit from an arrangement.
I go to restaurants on Sundays a lot with my girlfriend. I'll go to restaurants and I'll make sure it's at restaurants that have football games on TV. That way I can kind of check the game out while we're eating, but also be like, I didn't put this on myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Plausible deniability. Yeah. Very sad.
Just found a girlfriend who loves Applebee's.
one of my favorite things in and this is not just with the Browns, is when you get some scrappy underdog backup who comes in and plays really well. I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that arc, except for the inevitable quarterback controversy it always creates when everything's all said and done. I don't know if that'll happen with Watson. Watson seems, I don't know. I think Watson wants to just collect his money and get the hell out. That's kind of how I feel about this at this point. So I don't know that there'll be the controversy.
I don't know. I mean, what is it? Like, I don't know what the injury is.
Yeah, this is the thing. Know? I had that sense that he was like, not quite sandbagging it, but when they were, there was a lot of stuff where it was like, something's weird with his scapula. We can't tell you what, he won't tell us, blah, blah,
blah.
It seems like it's actually like a bad injury that they were like that maybe it wasn't all him not wanting to.
We want to check it out, but he keeps just asking us to move the tower.
Right, I was gonna say.
And we're like, that's not what you said hurts. And he's like, but I know what I need.
Bodies are complicated. I know my body. I know what I need.
You got to realign my chakras.
Okay, well, I want to say one thing too. Whenever Elrond pops up here, it looks like it almost feels like the beginning of Against Always Sunny episode of that font that you have where somebody's talking and all of a sudden Elrond Mexico, like where the gang talks the saints. Like,
I mean, you at least do have, like, you can start watching them now because he is out for the year. You do have the moral stain of them giving him $32 million
right,
to watch the games with you, literally at your house. But you can actually now watch, what is his name in DTR?
Dorian Thompson Robinson?
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, I got his name wrong, but yeah.
I thought it was going to go back to PJ Walker, but they didn't, they skipped him.
I think that you, at this point, can say that you've seen enough. Like, he's one of those guys, like, he, in the ways that I think a lot of backup quarterbacks are, it's like useful to see who he's actually better than, but like, you know that he's not good. It's just one of those things where, like, you know, I remember it was in like Carolina or something, you were like, he's definitely better than Sam Darnold, huh? Like, all right, that's interesting. But that's like his purpose, is to like serve as like a stable reference that you can then judge busted former third overall picks against.
And I think like Nate Peterman's the bottom of that metric, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peterman is, I mean, an amazing character. He's had an amazing football life for a guy that really probably shouldn't be in the NFL at all. But the Bills boning themselves out of a playoff spot because like Sean McDermott was like, I need a white guy back there. Like, you don't understand. Like, and then like, I think one of Peterman's last real acts as a pro, although I guess he's probably on a roster right now.
He's still on a team.
Yeah.
He's on the Bears, maybe?
Gruden really.
Yeah, he's the Bears.
And so he was getting on and off the Raiders roster and getting, like, you know, sort of like practice squad assignments and stuff. But Gruden was like very open about, like, I see something in this guy. And it's like, that's not the most disqualifying thing that Gruden said, it turned out, but it was like, on its merits, it's disqualifying enough.
Well, no, it turns out to be exactly all the other things that Gruden said.
Yeah.
We know what he saw in that.
Yep.
And what's funny is, like, you know, Tyrod Taylor turns out to be like the competent guy who's stuck on everyone's bench forever for prejudices that almost sometimes seem dead. But it's like, unless you're a starting quarterback at the top of the NFL, you probably, in most cases, still can't be black. They don't have a place for you to be like a replacement guy most of the time.
Taylor's, I want to watch enough of him this year, and I'd always been like an advocate of him because he was clearly, in the same way, I mean, in the opposite way in terms of how he played football, but in the same way in terms of like positionally how he slotted in. Like, I always thought that like Ryan Fitzpatrick's problem as an NFL player was that he was like the 22nd to 25th best quarterback in the NFL, but he was always a backup. And so it's the sort of thing where there's like, there are guys who, if they're your backup, it's like clear that someone in the front office is like aware that your starter stinks. That like when you bring in like Ryan Fitzpatrick to back up Jameis Winston, what you're saying is, I've watched a lot of Jameis Winston and I understand what our circumstances are here, you know? Mm. And with Tyrod Taylor, he kind of had that similar role, but like where Fitzpatrick was kind of like, you know, just raw dog in life from one moment to the next, just out there trying to do weird shit. Like, Taylor is very responsible and very boring and actually very difficult to watch if you are like wanting good football shit. Like, he never makes a mistake, but he never does anything cool either. And so you're just sort of, it's like a simulation player.
I'm pretty sure Peterman finished the game where he threw 4 interceptions in a half. And we have mentioned before that should have a coach not only fired, but sent to the Hague to like answer for it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like bad enough that you have already sort of convinced yourself of this completely unconvincing thing where it's like you've just like whatever it is that you're doing as a coach, like however bad the carbon monoxide leak in your office is, you're like, I think it's Peterman. I really think it's him. And then like you, if you're watching him in a game and he's throwing four picks and a half, like at that point you're outside. You can't blame it on the carbon monoxide. Like you have to
and I gotta take responsibility. Say, I remember the highlights. Those were not great defensive plays.
No. Yeah. He's so do you have like a guy that you think of as like the worst NFL quarterback that you've seen?
Oh.
Like in person or just on TV?
Oh, not just like from flipping around to games and stuff. Okay. I was at a game where oh my gosh, I'm forgetting his name now.
Skelton, probably.
Guy that was drafted by the Buccaneers, Josh Freeman. I watched a game where he set the NFL record for incompletions. I was at that game. it sucked. He was with
As someone who watched Freeman, I think, once beat the Saints. It's a really depressing thing to hear. But I feel like the worst guy I ever saw was the Skelton era in Arizona.
Yeah, he couldn't do it. Beck with the Dolphins had some truly remarkable moments.
Yeah. He's not the worst, but I always think of, whenever I think of like quarterbacks, Heath Shuler. Remember Heath Shuler? Do you remember?
Yeah.
You know who he played for?
Yeah. Can you find, are there like, if you go to like a Goodwill in New Orleans that's like haunted, would you find a Heath Shuler jersey, or is that just like nobody ever invested like that?
Yeah,
those are in the thrift store.
Because he was like a top 10 pick, if I remember correctly. He was like
and took him in the first round. I'm not sure that's true. I think he was like a Heisman contender, but I think he slipped.
Did he? Okay.
I don't remember for sure, but I thought that we got him.
Yeah. I'm looking. I'm looking.
Of course.
Shuler was a truly lousy NFL quarterback, like just a real bad guy to watch.
You remember when he headbutted the wall and gave himself a concussion, like for celebrating?
Was that him? I thought that was Farad. I thought that was Gus Farad.
That was Gus Farad. Okay. I forgot about that.
Okay. Yep. I still think of that as being one of the great, like, when keeping it real goes wrong moments too, that it's like whatever the opposite of acting like you've been there before is, that's that.
He was the third pick,
but we didn't take him.
The Washington Redskins took him.
The Redskins.
We got him,
but we ended up with him.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the. There was a kind of a darkish time for Saints quarterbacks between the Billy Joe platoon. That was a good moment.
Oh god.
And then eventually Aaron Brooks, but like Shuler was in between that interregnum, right?
Yeah.
We even had Danny Werfel for a little bit. He was terrible.
Really?
Yeah. He's
what an amazing honor.
That's who I was thinking of. We did take him, but we took him like the fourth or fifth round.
It is funny.
He was like another one of those Florida quarterbacks, like Florida. I know he went to Florida, but
the Spurrier
I think
guy.
Of him and Winky, like guys who graduated in their 30s.
Yep.
And still got picked in the first, you know?
Winky was amazing. I love that guy's whole, just like a 31-year-old man as an NFL rookie. Lived a whole ass life.
Yeah, he had like male pattern baldness. And
that was the other thing too. He had the Woody Harrelson thing where it's like, however old he is, like you're just adding 5 to it because the hairline's so fucked, which is like...
Yeah.
Kurt Russell, just like, I'm not playing that guy.
It is funny to talk about like bad quarterbacks with me over here as a Brown. I know that it's, and it wasn't, this was not the case before the Browns came back. Like we had Kosar Testaverde. I mean, we had quarterbacks who would be there for a while, but it is so funny. It's like the Arlington National Cemetery of quarterbacks at this point. Like there are ones that I forget about, like Jeff Garcia, like, oh fuck, I forgot we had him for like 2 seasons. You know what I mean? Like there are quarterbacks that I'm like, I remember Tim Couch because he was like the big exciting quarterback. I remember all of them, but there's been so many that like, it really truly does feel like a cursed position. Like I feel like the last thing that I feel bad for DTR, like it's, this time is numbered. You know what I mean? His days are limited before
he... Spinal Tap drummer.
Yeah, it really is. Like it's sort of like, but if that drummer was played briefly by Charlie Fry or whatever. But yes.
Charlie Fry, there's another one.
Oh yeah.
Right. See, we could remember some fucking Browns quarterbacks here. I just don't think that's a nice thing to do to your listeners.
It's not fair. No, I mean, I just remember the first time we took a quarterback, and I was just like, no, was when we took Steve Walsh, who just put up, you know, like pinball numbers in Miami. But his job in Miami was to just throw it as far as he could.
And then like Randall and Hill. Would... Yeah, right. It was like literally like guys that were going to be in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah. He's, it's just like you have an elite offensive line. So just, you know, just remember what side of the field Michael Irvin is on and then throw it as hard as you can. That's your job.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you will be a millionaire. And then we took him in like the supplemental draft and blew our first round pick. And he was never a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
The first time I started watching the Saints in earnest, my friend Mike is from New Orleans, my friend from college. And then he graduated a year before me, moved to Brooklyn, and then he got NFL season ticket in like 2001. And that was when I started living here. And so you would go there and, you know, you had like a nice TV and you could watch all the games. But like the price you had to pay for that was that like you would have to watch.
Oh, you mean Sunday ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, for Sunday ticket. It was just like the price you'd pay was that you watched Aaron Brooks for 4 hours or whatever. And then the rest of it was like dealer's choice. Like it's like Mike's in the fucking bathroom crying or whatever because of what happened. So like just whoever has the remote can watch whatever game you want to watch.
Yeah.
Brooks changed me, man. I had never seen a quarterback like that before. I'd never seen anybody
I remember the Brooks era fondly.
He was kind of good. He would make three great throws per game, and then there'd be one time where he would make the weirdest mistake you've ever seen a quarterback.
He made tons of dumb mistakes. But I still remember it fondly because he's the only mobile quarterback we've ever had. And that was neat.
Yep.
We never get that. And he could chuck it, you know. He really could just, you know, fling the ball around. And so he was a fun quarterback to have.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He'd tend to infuriate the fan base because, like, when he would make one of those mistakes, they'd cut to him on the bench and he'd just be chuckling. Like, can you believe I did that?
Like, I remember this. I remember. Like, and it was funny because, like, I think my friend Mike is, like, a real hardcore, like, born and raised in New Orleans Saints fan. And, like, he would get mad at us because we would be, like, not just laughing at Aaron Brooks laughing, but we'd be like, why did he always just throw the ball straight up in the air like that and then just sit down? Like, what, is that a play? And he's like, you just shut the fuck up. Like, he just could not. It was hard not to laugh at it. He
shut
did
the fuck up. He's going to be a senator.
Yep.
You know, David, you got me
like Michael Vick's cousin?
Yeah, they're related somehow, I believe. Yeah. Let me look that up. What were you going to say, Eric?
Yeah, I don't think I've actually... No, I take that back. I was trying to think if I've ever met in real life, just because I'm in Ohio. I'm not saying this in a bad way, but like I'm like almost in Michigan. If I've ever met like a diehard Saints fan, like a real life in the wild, big time Saints fan. And I just remembered there was a kid I went to high school with who was always like, if I remember correctly... He was also a humongous fan of No Limit Records, and there was like a tie-in there because I think it might have just had to do with that.
He was just he was just into the New Orleans culture in general.
Yeah. Like I think that was why.
But for New Orleans. Yeah.
I know, I love that.
Just sitting at lunch with a Bananas Foster. I was gonna say, like,
the only guy in that part of Ohio that had like opinions on beignets.
God, Timmy, there are so many meats on that sandwich. Yeah, an olive spread.
The idea that you could get into the Saints because you're so into Silk the Shocker is really great to me. You're sort of like, I just want to feel what he feels. I want to know what it feels like to be juvenile on a Sunday.
So Ron, did you watch any of today's action?
Yeah, well, I was working.
Take the week off.
No, I'm working. I did watch a little bit of football because when I was passing in front of the TV at work, I saw Thomas Morstead throw a fucking pass, and I went,
"Yes,
yeah." And I also
saw that.
Yeah, I was like,
"So wait, what? Wait a second, he's on the Jets, right?"
Yeah, so yeah. That was their, I believe.
Was that their only touchdown? I saw that they scored 6 points.
So it was for sure their best play of the day. It was, they were backed up deep in their own territory. They were already down like 16 or 19 nothing. And it was like, you felt that they were like 16 points worse. Fourth and two, he threw like a little lollipop to a guy and they gained a bunch of yards. And that was like, it was... Because the guy stepped out of bounds, it wound up being like an 18-yard pass play, and that was like the team's entire offensive output to that point through like basically a half of football was like 13 yards.
So if he hadn't stepped out of bounds, did he have like real...
Yeah, it was like, it would have been...
Was it a cold back touchdown?
It would have been like a 40-yard gain. Instead, it was like an 18-yard gain.
Yeah, so I guess that means quarterback controversy.
Yes, I was going to say the other thing that the Jets did at the end of the game, they did finally pull Zach Wilson, and they put... do you know who their other backup is?
It's not Flacco anymore.
It's not. Think about the fact that they basically had to bring in all of Aaron Rodgers' emotional support animals and put them on the roster. It's Tim Boyle, who is worse than Zach Wilson. Like, really and truly, like... A lousy, shitty third string.
That. Oh. I thought you were going to say they exhumed Matt Flynn.
No, I mean, they did, right? It was Aaron Brooks again. They got him back. Also confirmed, Ron, he was the second cousin of the Vicks, of Michael and Marcus.
Okay, so, all right.
Good memory
related,
for that fucking weird tidbit. I got to tip my hat on that one. That is...
But I've literally never heard of Tim Boyle. I could have named like a bunch of like old Green Bay backups, but he's not one who made the list.
So he's,
I mean, I can tell. I feel like people in New York really don't like any of the Aaron Rodgers collective slumber party, like Randall Cobb and Eddie Lazard and Alan Lazard.
You're thinking of the comic
Eddie Izzard.
Yes.
Put him in a dress.
Right.
No,
non-binary observational situation slot receiver, Eddie Lazard.
Apparently, like, I haven't watched the Jets very much. You know, I go to the bar, I watch the Saints, and I listen to the, you know, Sturm und Drang around me of people paying attention to different games. And I just know that they hate the Aaron Rodgers without Aaron Rodgers.
That was
experience.
Well, they had to do all this humiliating shit to make Rodgers feel at home, and then it's like the biggest bait and switch imaginable, where you're just sort of like, well, actually, what you're gonna get instead is like Nathaniel Hackett and his new facial hair ideas. You get 17 weeks of that, and you get like one series of Aaron Rodgers. Like, that is a bad deal, you know, even by Jet standards. I think that's like the worst case scenario.
Last week, in remembering guys, that I think the Giants' backup now is Matt Barkley.
It is, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I always wonder what those guys are doing when they're... Because, like, Barkley's still, like, a guy that sometimes is on rosters and sometimes is not. So is he just, like, showing houses or, like... I feel like real estate is probably what most of these guys are doing. But the idea that he's, like, just got a second phone for his agent and he will take it and just be like, ah, whatever, it's laminate flooring. I got to go. I have to go back up an Italian guy.
And he's like, yeah.
You know, as far as that Rodgers thing goes, like, I thought about this when this happened this season, too. Like, 5 years ago, four seasons ago, like, it would have been one of those things where people would have been like, oh, poor Rodgers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He did everything he could this season to make that circumstance the funniest thing imaginable when it happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, he had, like...
I mean, I think it's really funny that he went full-on bonkers weirdo.
Right.
The second he didn't get the Jeopardy job.
Yeah. It's like, well, that's, isn't that like the thing that I don't know if it's Patton Oswalt, there's some comic that's basically pointed out like what percentage of reactionary weirdos or guys that like had one really bad night doing stand-up comedy and they're like, I fucking hate Jews now.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I can't believe
it. Yeah, I mean, there are a bunch. I mean, yeah. It's like, well, I think I actually do have a theory about this. I think it's because comedians see themselves as real risk takers because that's what people who don't stand up on stage tell them they are. Yeah. Like people have stage fright. And so they're like, well, I don't have that. So I'm a fucking hero. And so it's like very Jeff Gold. They spent so much time thinking about whether they could. They don't think about whether they should. And so the idea that the most offensive thing you can say is by the principle that you have decided on, the thing that you have to say, you now consider yourself the more offensive you are, the braver you are, and you become very protective of the idea that criticism is censorship, and you can't be judged critically in a way that doesn't implicate your right to speak. And so it's real fucking mind poison when you think that any negative feedback is the same thing as censorship. And that's what leads people down this fucking weirdo reactionary path, because they decide on this. And even people who are otherwise liberal, they get this fucking hair up their ass about free speech, which misunderstands the concept of free speech in a very, very pronounced way.
I think you can also, the other thing that's interesting about this too is like you can hear the grandiosity part too, that like the grandiosity, which I think is the part that holds all of that in place, because otherwise there's a lot of contradictory shit and a lot of conjecture and all that. But that bit, I think that is very clarifying to hear it that way too, the idea of like, if you, it's not like that you deserve to bomb, it's that like people are afraid of your truth. And so it's like the shittier you do, the crazier you get.
And well, and the fact is, all, not all, because I'm the huge exception to this, but all comedians who've done one open mic are kind of like this a little, because they adopt that attitude. And I just remember once being in the fucking basement of the Village Lantern in the West Village. It's like this really depressing room to do comedy in, but everyone's doing it, so it's sort of fun in its own way. And a guy is up there, and he is, I only say it because it's relevant to the joke that he's about to tell. He's a black comic, and he's talking about how his family moved to the neighborhood, and there, you know, I think the joke was really convoluted and poorly constructed and ended up with lowercase t's being burned on his lawn or something. And since the joke took like 15 minutes to tell and was bad, no one laughed. And he's like, you'll get it later. And I'm like, no. That one didn't go soaring over our heads. You know, your lowercase t wasn't too subtle a metaphor for the room. And there are just endless people like that being poured out of directional universities all over the country.
Yeah, I think you see that in podcasts too. Like if a podcast doesn't take off, somebody becomes, I've seen that with like, I mean, we see similar circles here, like people who start off like, I'm a big time lefty. And then like, I could, you know what I mean? Like they see what happened with Chapo and they're like, I think I can do that. And then it doesn't work. And they're like, quote unquote, post left now. And they're basically just like racist as can be. And they're like, we're actually the leftists here. Like that's what we are.
Yeah, usually it involves a harassment charge. And then, you know, you're like, wow, people really are too woke for me to grab their boob.
Yeah. I had assumed that my truth, which was that I wanted to grab that person's boob, meant something in this day and age. But obviously...
Yeah. So that's Aaron Rodgers. To remind us why we're saying this, this is literally Aaron Rodgers.
They said
he got caught very blatantly fudging whether or not he'd been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? He kept using weasel words to avoid saying no. What did he say? He said he was
immunized. That he had like swallowed dozens of powerful crystals. Like it was like the worst possible way to believe that you had become immunized.
He had COVID and three poultices. That's why.
He's like, I got bled. My humors are normal. I don't have to answer anymore.
How much mugwort do I need to take to satisfy you people?
Did he didn't pull out the HIPAA violation. He didn't pull out the word HIPAA at any point, did he? Was he one of those people who misunderstood that? Okay.
I couldn't remember. It's funny that you mentioned that though, Eric, because I like link him as a big time HIPAA guy in my head, where, like in the sense where he's just sort of like, I guess medical privacy doesn't matter anymore. But now it's like, that was like 15 stops down the line ago. Like now he's just like the germ theory of disease is like not, like that is now the subject to debate for him. I can't wait until he gets back to New Jersey. They said he's been rehabbing in California, which I'm assuming just means
ayahuasca.
Yeah, I was gonna say like raw water, different types of mud administered in ways that you just ordinarily would not medically see it being administered.
The only vaccine he'll take is bong water.
But I love the idea that if he gets a little bit better, then he gets to go to like Lyndhurst, New Jersey to the rented.
he made them promise that he can live in Tony Soprano's house. Yep. Yeah.
Shuffling down to the end of the driveway to get like some sort of Andrew Weil magazine about holistic healing that he has delivered.
He's getting American Mercury delivered. Yep.
Oh,
he is. I would have been so mad if the Saints signed him to follow Drew Brees. Oh, I'm like, man. I've had enough dumb politics in my corner. Yeah. Yeah. And you signed a almost certain rapist. You don't have to add this to the collection.
So is Derek Carr like a relief in the sense that he's just like a sweet evangelical himbo who's like...
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he's not like fun to watch or anything, but...
No, he's definitely not.
Yeah, he's...
I'm going to let Ron take this one. Let's talk about David Carr, Ron.
You mean David Duke Carr. Derek Duke Carr, or whatever his... Yeah. Yeah. I don't think so. He's... Okay, so he's... My theory is he's slightly... Like, Breeze was kind of dumb. Like, a little bit, right? Like, I think that all that focus on the family stuff that, like, he got caught up in, I don't think, like, he really hates gay people or anything like that. I think just somebody said, would you do a commercial for, like, Focus on the Family? And he was probably like, I have a family. I like to focus on my family. That sounds like a good organization. Yeah. So, like...
And I don't know if we're doing him a favor with that, but I totally agree with that. Even, to me, like, of all the dumb shit he got caught up in, the multi-level marketing one was one where I was like, yes, this explains a lot.
Yes. Right. He's real football smart. And like when Michael Thomas had to explain to him, like, hey, you know, black people are disproportionately targeted by the police. And like, he was like, what? Are you serious? Like, I thought the cops were the good guys. In the movies, they're good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I remember he said some bullshit about Kaepernick kneeling, probably indistinguishable from what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, but that's my other podcast. Yeah. But he said something dumb, and immediately, like, Michael Thomas posted a clown face, and Kamara's like, I don't know about that. And, like, the whole team was just like, And, like, DeMario Davis is, like, very much into like civil rights, and he talks a lot. about like community and stuff like that. And so immediately there was like a team meeting before Drew Brees like had his name, which was pre-etched into like the circle of like, you know, whatever the circle in the stadium, there's just sort of sanding it down. So he had to like have this meeting where he's like, I swear to God, I'm not racist. Yeah. I had a lot of concussions.
But I feel like it says something that he more or less got away with, for the reason that I think Ron pointed out, where it's like he started, I'm sure that he talked about it and tried to speak his piece, and like at some point you're like, no, he's just dumb.
He's just
like
dumb.
That's not he's, like yeah. Doesn't exactly get you off the hook, but it's one thing where it's like, so this guy doesn't know that like like he thinks that like Law and Order is like a just a real thing, that it's like
that's how it
like a periscope you look through. And those are real cops and real lawyers solving cases.
He said he went on like a tour of Guantanamo and came back talking about how they were, you know, how they're treated so well. And it's like they gave him a tour of Rock Ridge.
Yep.
You know, like the Potemkin town in Blazing Saddles, you know, and, you know, like they had like, you know, Corporal Jimenez, they put him in a job, and they're like, look at how well they're treating, you know, so it's, I don't, he's, I think he's just probably pretty dumb, but I think that all convinced him ultimately that he doesn't want a career in politics, because all the whispers were that he probably could have walked into the Senate and was thinking about that as like a post career, but I think after all of this, he's like, oh my God, what if I have to have an opinion again?
Yeah. I think that there's something kind of reassuring about that, though, that like this is one of the rare instances of like the, you know, the girls get mad at me tweet, like actually like delivering that, like people were like, that's stupid. I hated that you said that. And he could somehow hear them enough through being super famous for 20 years to be like, oh, I don't care for this at all. Just do something
this
else.
Doesn't feel good.
Yeah. I mean, like bullying works.
Yep.
And it apparently bullying jocks works even better.
Yeah. And
but everything I've heard, yeah, go Ron.
Oh, I was gonna say, but Derek Carr doesn't imbue that same type of like sympathy at all. He's because he's slightly smarter, but he seems like kind of a dick. So like, I don't give him the same amount of leniency. And he's not as good as Brees, too. So there's always that factor.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's like the real salient thing here is that like Derek Carr is like exactly as annoying as a quarterback who's as middling as him can be. If he was more annoying, he wouldn't have a job. Like he'd be J.P. Lawson or something, you know? But like he's just on the right side of it.
Yeah. He's walking that line.
He has been kind of weird to watch. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what it's like. You know, I don't know how bad his injury was. You know, because in the Minnesota game, he got slammed to the turf pretty hard, and I think it was his other shoulder that got hurt this time, and he got a concussion, and so I don't know what his situation is in 2 weeks. But his line is actually finally playing kind of well. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can come back and be any good.
Winston is the single most usurpable quarterback in the league. I mean, if he can do it.
We talked about last week's game. I don't know if you saw last week's Saints game or the highlights or anything, but they were getting torched. Winston came in, threw two passes blindfolded that were touchdowns, and then threw two really bad picks.
Yeah, that's the Jameis Winston experience right there.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about.
Two and two.
Yep. Can I ask a Saints question? Obviously, I've heard the pod and everything. Are you having any fun watching them this year? I asked my friend Mike this, too.
You go, Joe.
You go first.
All right, I'll go first. Not really. I like the team. I like most of the guys. To me, it's mostly just Derek Carr. I had a ton of fun watching Jameis have his game. Like, that half he played was really enjoyable for me, just because I was like, all right, this just feels I don't know, something feels right about it in that that charming way the Saints can be bad. And when they're bad in the way Derek Carr is bad, that's not the charming Saints that I'm used to. They're more of a, that's a frustrating, annoying type of bad. So, but I still like, I mean, I love football, so I'm gonna continue to watch this garbage. But it's
That is, it's very strongly suggested all of us are going to continue drinking this garbage. That is what brought us here today.
Yeah, I mean, I am, it's very weird. Right, they're 5-5, but since they play in an absolute joke of a division, they have a full game lead on the Bucks and the Falcons, and they still have to play the Falcons twice. So they could have a 2-game lead. They play the Falcons in the next week, and so we could theoretically have a 2-game lead with the tiebreaker against the Falcons, but not the Bucs. The defense is intermittently great, though it's all the secondary, because the pass rush just has, I think, 3 sacks this season. The run, you know, they're good at stopping the run mostly, but usually they're good at stopping bad running teams. And the offense is just weird. It's just weird. They can't seem to run the ball, even though Kamara is a very good back. And Derek Carr throws passes as if he's terrified of being sacked on every play because the line was really bad the first few weeks. So, like, Alvin Kamara will have stat lines like 11 carries for 45 yards.
And then 10 receptions. 10 catches. Yeah.
And 10 receptions for 39 yards.
Yeah.
Because all of his catches are like behind the line of scrimmage and they forget to block for him. We have people who just keep whiffing. Like, what I'm thinking is Tre'Quan Smith was a huge joke in New Orleans for a long time because he would have like, you know, 22 receptions a year and everyone talk about how good a blocker he was. I'm like, why don't, what the fuck? Who gives a shit if, you know, your third round pick wide receiver is a good blocker? But maybe he's the reason why Kamara was always getting sprung because no one's whiffing the block on the safety and hitting him in the backfield. You know, I mean, we have one guy whose name I forget every week. He's number 5, who is a, you know, receiver who
Bowden
has like 2 catches on the year or something. And he's apparently a good blocker and that's why he plays, but he's not Tre'Quan, I guess. Yeah. You know, like Sean Payton did in Denver, what Aaron Rodgers did with the Jets. Like the team is just littered with Saints cast offs, Adam Troutman and Will Lutz and, Tre'Quan, and I think there are a couple more.
It is, you know? It's Lynn Bowden Jr. or Bowden. Lynn Bowden. Or Bowden, whatever. Ron said his name.
Bowden, I remember, something like that. Yeah,
I remember him as a college player. He played at Kentucky. He was good. But yeah, it's not the sort of, when you're talking about how your receivers are doing the little things and throwing those, it's like, that's loser talk. Like, that's somebody that is, like, football team is like, making them unhappy.
Yeah. I mean, like, we talked about this a little last week. There were some weird games between Carr and Olave where Olave was fingered as the guilty party for not running the right routes or not running all out on routes when he wasn't the primary. And it seemed like Carr just mostly stopped throwing to him at all. And last week he gets hurt and the first 2 passes are like completions to Olave, including a touchdown. And I was like, oh, he just hates Olave. You know, Carr, like, Jameis finds him open, but for some reason Derek Carr has no interest in looking at him anymore. And Michael Thomas was hurt on the second play of the game last week. So you'd think that would mean more Olave, not that he was, you know, on an ice flow. You know? So I don't know. To answer your question, as long as they're in first place, I can put up with this very frustrating shit. We've also had like two real blowout wins.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a really hard team for me to get the Patriots, a handle on.
And
yeah.
There was someone else who we like absolutely stomped
the Colts
crap out of. Yeah,
we beat them pretty bad.
Yeah, and so that stuff has kind of invigorated me, even though we have had a bunch of games come down to like really, really disappointing, constipated offenses when we were within a score of winning. And of course, Groupie, you know, missed the game winner against Green Bay in week 3. We literally could be the worst 10-1 team. It makes it extra frustrating, but it also makes it a little harder to give up on the season.
I guess I was sort of like that with the Giants last year, in the sense that it's like I don't have to think the team is good one way or another. Like, if I know the team is bad and they're like not playing as bad as I think they are, then like I'm actually, that's a deal I'm willing to take most times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's like if they're being 5-5 and in first place is like, if that is exceeding the results of the eye test that you give them every Sunday enough mm-hmm. that you're just sort of like, I don't know, let's see where this goes. Then like, that's the worst places to be in the 10th week of the season or 11th.
Yeah.
It's a running theme. They're 5-5 against a really, really weak schedule. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't get stronger from here. Like, the schedule continues to be incredibly weak. And Atlanta's schedule is even easy. And that's with us playing Atlanta twice and Atlanta playing us twice. And we're technically better. So think about the dog shit in Atlanta's future. Right?
Yeah.
So there could be two teams coming out of this terrible division because everyone we play is so bad.
Yeah.
Is Cleveland in a playoff spot right now?
Oh, seven and three right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 7-3 right now.
They're looking great. The Bengals don't have Burrow the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. The Steelers
do have Pickett the
rest of the year. They're committed to that. Yeah. You'd really love to beat a Browns right now. You know?
Yeah. No, it is one of those where it's like, I picked a hell of a time to have like standards about the fucking Browns because we're actually looking good this year. You know what I mean?
You and your fucking ethics.
Yeah.
I'll drop it. As soon as they hit the playoffs, I'll be back to being like, I'll be calling the Browns we again. I'll be like, we're looking great.
Reintegrating the plastic dog mask just like into your day-to-day.
They signed some guy who just got released from his January 6th sentence. He's a fighter! He's a fighter!
He stands up for what he believes in.
I agree with him on every...
They probably vaccinated him when he was...
It's part of processing guys at the federal level. Look, I'm not here to talk. I'm here to talk about football.
No, I totally... I absolutely put those blinders on. It is probably the third worst thing I do, and my lawyer has told me not to talk about the other two. Let's see. Who is your next game, Eric? Pressure question.
I mean, I gotta look. Like I said, I have been watching the season through fingers. You know what I mean? So,
I'm sure he'll release you, whoever that is.
Cut this out so I don't sound stupid, though. Cut out me being like,
As soon as Charles asked that question, I started looking myself.
I
have an answer.
Broncos.
The Broncos.
Oh, that's not bad. As I went to look it up, I see that it is just so you know, when this is how you know that we're recording on Sunday. It is currently 17:15 in the Vikings Broncos game. So, oh, sorry, 20:15 in the Vikings Broncos game in what they're calling the game of the century.
An instant classic.
Yeah.
They are calling it Lutzomania.
I saw Peyton on the sideline briefly before we started recording, and he was making a real weird face. Like
he looks like kind of now.
Oh, that's his game face and his sex face.
But he does not look like I remember him looking. And it's not just because he has been like played by Kevin James in the movies, and now I think he looks like Kevin James. Yeah. Like there's something about him where it's like he looks like someone who looks like Sean Payton, but he does not look like in my head what Sean Payton looks like.
He's got like a windburn lake tan thing happening. And he looks
to me the quintessential Sean Payton face is combination school marm and Ada Lemon.
Yep.
You know, like his lips are surgically pursed.
This was a weird one because he was kind of hitting like he was making like a Robert De Niro in Cape Fear face. Like he was kind of like, oh, you kidding me? Like when he was kind of like being a little like a different energy from him. But it's still, he was doing it with Sean Payton's face. So I was like, that's not how you use that, dude. Like you're like,
Well, he showed Child's Play as a motivational tool.
We got to go
Did
out
he
there
really?
Getting our...
No.
No, okay. You can't put anything past him though. Like the idea of like a coach being like, we're gonna be Chucky. This team is gonna be Chucky. Like that's not like completely out of bounds for any of this. Like I wrote last week about Jim Harbaugh's love for the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald and its downstream effects on the University of Michigan program. But there was a player on that team who wore an Edmund Fitzgerald t-shirt to the game at Penn State. And a reporter asked him about it. And he was like, Coach Harbaugh loves the song. I like it too. It's got some cool imagery in it. Anyway, when I hear it, I think we're the lake. Like we're not the boat that sinks in the lake. We're the lake that eats the boat. And that's crazy. But it's also like that's football coaching. Like that is like what
you don't want to know what's hidden in our depths.
Right. We don't give up our dead. Yeah.
You know, checking it out, we do, and here I am. I just said we. The Browns have a very easy
We're back like during the week, slamming a bunch of shot glasses.
Jacksonville's like our hardest, like I think that might be the only real challenge we have the rest of the season. It's a pretty cake schedule. We get the Bears, get the fuck out of here.
Nice. Right? Yeah. So the Giants are presented with nothing but challenges the rest of the way. Every other team that they're going to play is better than them.
Yeah.
Right. Including who is next?
Well, the Patriots, who are also bad. It's just like the Giants could lose to anybody. That winning this game today, like, I'm willing to accept the possibility that the Giants might win again. Having watched them the previous couple of weeks, I was like, they're just going to fucking lose out and, like, wind up with the first pick. Like, I wouldn't have surprised me if they'd done that.
Yeah. The Patriots are really, really bad.
They could lose to anybody. They've really got
that
something.
Watching that game was like, this is a team that was just put together of neighborhood kids.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think it's like
coach just got out of prison. You know, this is part of his community service. Yeah.
It has a real, it's like the end stage, like the final stage of Bill Belichick, like where he always liked to have like one guy from Navy and like one guy that played lacrosse in college. And now the team is just all college lacrosse athletes and Mac. This is what he overplayed his hand.
Not so brilliant anymore, are you? And the axe descends between my eyes.
You know, another thing, fucking Bill Belichick coached the Browns for a few, how the fuck, that's what's unbelievable to me too, is that like, maybe it is just Cleveland's curse. Like he goes elsewhere and becomes like the most winning like coach in history. You know what I mean? Like,
And wasn't he a Jet? Like, if you want to talk about the real curse, wasn't he the Jets coach for 15 minutes?
Yes, and he's never stopped being mad about it. But yeah, the Browns version of Belichick was, because they got him when he was like a bright young thing. Like he was, mm-hmm. like, you know, the prized assistant from Parcells' staff.
Yeah.
It does sort of have that feeling where for the longest time, that story made sense in that, like, he instantly became a genius in New England and, you know, the team was a dynasty. Where it's like, if you go back and look at it, it's like the fact that he went like 8-8 with the Browns, you're like, well, that's actually almost as impressive. Like, yeah. It's like the same, just like a shitty team. But I don't even know if he did remember it well enough. It was a long time ago. But like, I don't know that you would have been able to see any signs of a genius in.
And I'm trying to think who would have been, because again, we're talking, this is Jesus Christ 30 years ago or whatever. But like, I'm trying to think who the roster would have been under Belichick when he was, surely Testaverde was the quarterback at that point. I'm just assuming.
Yeah, Testaverde or like Eric Zier or something like that. But it was like not a guy, it was not Tom Brady, I guess is like the salient point here, but it was, yeah. So they went, Belichick went 11-5 with the Browns in 1994. And that was Vinny T and some slight Mark Rippon notes on the finish for a few games. But like, that is a long ass time ago. 1994, just some other names from that roster. Leroy Horde, Eric Metcalf, Ernest Biner. It's like that era.
Metcalf and Biner. Oh my God.
That's my Tecmo Bowl guys it is right there. Oh, 100%.
Man. Dude, Metcalf.
I love Metcalf.
Metcalf was a hero.
Kick returner. Oh, shit. Yeah, he was good.
Keenan McCardell, but like the young Keenan McCardell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Real interesting times.
I think Nick Saban was like the defensive coordinator for the Browns around that time, right?
He was around that team, I think. Yeah. I don't know if he was on that. I just closed that tab. Let me find it.
He might have.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. As we're talking about this, pre-expansion, whatever the fuck you want to call the new Browns, listening to these team names, there's so much more nostalgia that I have with like hearing names like Ernest Biner than I have hearing like Tim Couch. There is such a divide between the Browns were so much more fun to watch even when they sucked before Art Modell took them to Baltimore. You know what I mean? Like there is just something was lost with that comeback team. That just, I don't, like, hearing Eric Metcalf, I'm going to go watch, like, a 1994 Browns game on YouTube after we get off of here. That's what I'm going to do. Like,
it's the right move, dog.
While we're talking about this, Denver has driven down to the 22 with a minute 21 left. And if Denver wins this game, they will be the most surprising 5-5.
Yep.
They will give Sean Payton the Nobel Prize in physics.
Yep. Given how they started, it's like, this is the team that allowed 70 points in a game like 1 month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they won four in a row? Shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
And they beat like the Chiefs for one of those wins. Like they actually beat some good teams and looked legit, which is amazing because they looked the most dog shit that I've seen. Like, I mean, they looked as bad as they did last year for a month. Mm-hmm.
All right, we are coming to the end of the hour, so let's go in order. Final thoughts on the rest of the season and what you are hoping for from this season, Eric.
I'm hoping to get some good viewings in at Applebee's or Benchwarmers or the local bar until the playoffs. And then you know, if you can feel free to make fun of me, like, in a later show when the Browns make the playoffs and you see me tweeting about like, fuck yeah, Cleveland. You know what I mean? Like, feel free. That's what's going to happen here.
Cleveland rocks.
No, honestly, look, if they get Winston out of there, I would love to be able to watch the Browns happen. But what will happen is Winston will go and then next year they'll go 3-14 or something. You know what I mean? Like, that's how this will play. I know how this works. I know how this works as a Browns fan. So what I'm hoping is, you know what? Maybe we get a good playoff run this year and I can enjoy it because Winston is not a part. I can distance myself. Look, I can separate the art from the artist. I can separate myself from the awful asshole that they signed as our quarterback if he's hurt. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm hoping that, and you know what? I just said we have an easy run. We could lose 5 of those games. It's Cleveland. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. I'm hoping that we do continue this and can get a playoff. If we get to the playoffs, I'll be happy. And,
So, David, are you thinking
playoffs?
Are you thinking Jalen Richards or Kyle Penix?
Yeah, I need to. This is basically like if Eric's gonna go like nostalgically watch like Gary Barnage's greatest touchdown catches, I should be fucking eating some tape on the college quarterback class. Like, if I'm gonna be a responsible Giants fan, I'd love for them to be watchable, but I'm not expecting that. Like, I'm just gonna like, we'll see where it actually goes. Like, today it was like at least pleasurable to see, like, I don't know. Guys in Giants uniforms made like three cool plays, and I was like, "That's all right. I can deal with that." Yeah. So, like, if they keep it around that level, and it's also, you know, this is at this point, I'm good enough at it that what I'm really hoping for is like the serenity to know when it's time to stop watching the Giants. Like, that's what I like. That's my real project. Oh,
yeah.
There,
yeah, I don't do that. I watch to the bitter end. How about you, Ron? What is your thought on the rest of the season? Feeling positive?
Yeah, just because our division's so bad. Because, like, eye test, we look like a 5-win team. And it's week 10, and we already got 5 wins. So I'm like, all right, now the rest is house money. Like,
playing with house money at this point.
Yeah, this is great. Like, I'd like to see Dennis Allen lose his job, but I would love to win a playoff game. So I'm kind of stuck between them. Right. I think it's going to come down to the last week of the season against the Falcons. I think we're going to clinch the division, and then we get a home field playoff game, and then I think we steal one, because I think maybe, and I hope Jameis is our quarterback, just because he's more interesting than Carr to me. They're the same guy, except one of them's funner. So, but I'm kind of like with Eric with that. With Jameis isn't, you know, doesn't have the, he's got some skeletons in his closet or whatever. You know, I don't know. That's probably a bad euphemism for like the terrible things he did. But.
Yeah, they're not right. Skeleton. He's got some skeletons in his hallway.
Yes. Yeah.
He has a 12-foot Home Depot skeleton on. Right. His
Yeah.
My closing thought is that I do think that this is somehow a playoff team, that the fates have conspired to give us the exact schedule to make this team a playoff team somehow. I'm just going to enjoy this like really stupid ride, even though I am going to reinforce my image at the bar as the guy who is screaming again.
The man in the Mitch Berger jersey who never sits down.
It is a Kamara jersey.
All right.
That I debuted last week. I just got new. So it's got nothing but bad vibes. All right. So thank you so much to my guests, Eric Peacock. Check out the Soundtracker podcast. Eric, who's up next?
Next episode is Michael Chow, Sriracha Chow. Yeah, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for Thanksgiving. And then,
oh, very nice.
I think Noah from Blowback is coming on to do Eyes Wide Shut. We kind of just set that up for the first one in December.
Soundtrack. If you like just hearing one key on a piano get pinged in a progressively more menacing way.
Yeah.
I put that on sometimes just to chill out, just to vibe.
We don't know if it's Noah, because he is wearing, Noah Cohen is wearing a masquerade mask. And David, who is coming up on the distraction? Any guests or just the two of you shooting the shit?
This week, Jasper, our operations chief, we already recorded that episode last week.
Because your annual report just came out.
It did. Yeah. We didn't ask him. Honestly, like most of the podcast is me being like, do you remember Mark Sanchez? And then like there's a little bit about like the business that we made together, you know, but it's like probably about 50-50. And then after that, I don't know, there's some booking stuff that we've done, but I think like Drew and I are due for another mess around one. And hopefully at some point we're going to, you know, go through the Williams Sonoma catalog around the holiday season. Like, I'm sure. Looking forward. This is like a good time of year for the pod that way, but we will see. And then Hallmark Podcast is still out there. I don't know where we are in terms of like actually recording stuff. You can still listen to them. We're still doing
it. Well, it's almost Hanukkah again, so I'll see you soon.
Can we put a little word? I don't know that it's going to do much here. There is a lost episode of that podcast where Jeb Lund basically invited every Jewish person he knows to come on and talk about this stupid fucking Hanukkah movie, and we all did it, and the episode still hasn't been released because the recording was so botched.
You know, we had to do that once. One of our episodes, the Packers episode, we had vodka lemonades on, and it turned out at the end of the episode that she had downloaded a counterfeit Audacity app that recorded nothing and probably turned her phone into a crypto.
Oh my God.
You know, I saw that her episode was the shortest one, and I just thought it was because you hated women or something. I didn't know what was going on.
She had to, like, after the fact, that's not, I mean, it's unrelated. After the fact, asked her to record a Get Our Ass that we spliced in, but I had to literally edit around her just so it was the parts where the two of us were talking. But that is it. It is the end of the episode. Our outro, of course, is more horns. The Saints didn't play, so there's no win, there's no loss. We have neutral to slightly positive horns with the Tampa Bay loss and the affirmation of our place in the universe. So if anyone wants to join us, it's basically
feel free to jump in.
Three,
yeah.
Two, one. Thank you to our guests Eric Peacock and David Roth, my partner Elron Mexico, to Lunar Snow, who is going to fix the audio on this. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.